to the Parentpreneur Accelerator podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis Kingsbury.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan. Hi there, it's Alexis here, and in this week's episode, I'm interviewing Nicole Kluwer. Nicole is the founder of luxury activewear brand Dot Dash Activewear. And prior to this, she was a celebrity trainer with 10 years experience in the fitness industry, ranging from bar, CrossFit, powerlifting, and personal training. After being an ambassador for a renowned fitness brand for 5 years, she decided to become an ambassador of her own brand, and Dot Dash Activewear was born. She started the brand when she was 3 months pregnant, and her son Jago is now 1 year old. In that first year, she was featured in Women's Health twice alongside other magazines such as Runner's World. As well as running Dot Dash Activewear, she's a qualified personal trainer and associate lecturer at Oxford Brookes University within the business department. She exercises regularly, and in 2014, she broke the squat British record in her own weight class, which is amazing. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. So in this episode, we'll be exploring juggling parenting and business, and particularly setting up the business in those early days of both the pregnancy and then the birth and first year of Jago's life. How to look after your mental health and well-being, and tips on fitness from Nicole there. And we'll also talk about entrepreneurship and taking the plunge, and how Nicole made that decision at that stage in her life. Nicole, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Cool. Well, it seems like health and fitness is very much in your blood. So tell us, why is that? Because for some people, the idea of doing exercise sounds horrible. For some people, love it. What's your relationship with this whole area?
So I've always loved exercise. And I think I've always had a really healthy relationship with exercise. But for me, it has never been a case of wanting to exercise, particularly lose weight. It's always been mostly for my well-being. I suffer from quite bad anxiety, so I think I always kind of go for a run to clear my anxiety. And then I kind of got into the weightlifting side of things. And I think that really helped me. If you ever feel like you're having a bad day, or I just used to find that kind of going to the gym, throwing some weights around, was really good for me. But I've always found that I've had a really good relationship with exercise, as opposed to feeling that I had to do it to lose weight, or to necessarily to kind of to make myself, it wasn't a case of wanting myself to look better all the time. It was just a case of doing it for my own mental health. And that's why I've always loved, and probably always will love, exercise and being fit. Or trying to get fit, should I say?
Yeah, indeed. That's which is fantastic, and I've got so many questions. But before I get into that, like, because that's interesting that your love of the kind of exercise and the health and the well-being and how it makes you feel, and the dealing with the anxiety and the throwing the weights around. How did that then link into the kind of your inspiration behind creating a luxury activewear brand?
So I think for me, because of my love of exercise and the fact that I'm a personal trainer, I found that I was living more and more in activewear. I would kind of go, I'd get up in the morning and I'd go to the gym, and then I'd find that I had to rush off to a client and then quickly grab some lunch on the way to the next client. And so I was finding that I was kind of living in activewear, quickly jumping in the shower, then putting on activewear again. So I think the connection between the two was that it was very much my life was activewear, and I wanted to take the plunge and kind of bring out my own brand that allowed me to wear activewear all day, but still, you know, hopefully look good in it, not necessarily have to be your standard dark colours. I wanted to have some bright floral kind of colours. If I was going to be wearing it all day, I wanted to like make one of it to look good, feel good, and that's my main reasoning behind them, Dot Dash Activewear.
Love it. And in fact, it's funny, and it wasn't particularly a conscious decision, but I am wearing active wear right now because
exactly,
it was like...
as you work.
Yeah, because as I work, and largely because I was thinking, right, I need to get out for a run. I know that I've got a pretty packed schedule, and so I knew,
Exactly.
you know, it's almost in preparation for that. And I think I guess it's almost a reflection of the lives we now live, you know,
Yeah,
as busy people
absolutely.
And people that do want to do exercise but also want to fit it around other things and so on. So when we talk about activewear, what are we talking about? Because for some people, the only activewear they are kind of familiar with is seeing people in the lycra, you know, right, going out for runs, etc. Is that what it extends to? What do we mean by activewear?
So for me, I mean, it very much is still your leggings, your sports bras, and also it is still about, again, for my brand, it's still about the clothing being functional. It's all well and good looking good. And I like to think my products do, but my products are all very functional, and I think that's the key thing behind active wear. With my next collection, we're definitely going down what I call the athleisure route. So we're introducing gilets and a tapered jogging bottom for those days where you don't necessarily, you may not actually be going. I mean, you mentioned that you've got active wear on now because you intend to go for a run today. But we're kind of living in a world now where sometimes actually you get up in the morning and you know you're not going to go to the gym, but you're still putting on your active wear. And so my next collection is designed also for that, with tapered jogging bottoms, which you probably wouldn't wear in the gym, but they are more for one of those days where you're still going to be ultra busy, but you want to look good, but you don't want to wear jeans or something like that. So we are kind of going down the athleisure route, which is why I call that athleisure. But active wear for me is still ensuring that it's functional, but it still looks good, because as we've discussed it for now, in this day, activewear is a big part of people's lives. We wear it a lot, and so I think it's important that it does look good. So that is what activewear is for me, is functional and stylish.
Nice.
And on a lycra.
Yeah, love it. And so how have you sort of managed to bring that together, because that's not an easy feat to achieve, and what's been the kind of inspiration behind the kind of designs that you've used and how you've made that work?
I guess for me it's watching a lot of watching the catwalks, finding out exactly what's going to be coming in next year. So if it's kind of geometric prints, if it's pastels, if it's floral. So it's always about trying to be one step ahead, which is very hard to do in the fashion industry. So there's an element of that, is trying to watch catwalks and things and being on top of the fashion aspect of things. But also I very much take what I like. So I don't always, I don't think you always have to go with what you think is going to be big next year. I think, okay, well, right now I'm liking brighter colours and I'm liking floral colours. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm quite liking the tapered jogger look, which I know a lot of brands are doing for men, but not so much for women. So it's about A, trying to spot gaps in the market, B, going with what you think looks good, and C, going with what you think may be popular in the coming months as well. So it's an element of all three of those things for me.
Fantastic. And so take us through the timeline of when your business launched, when your first collection came out, what collections you've then brought out since then, because I think both from a positioning of understanding this as an industry, that's kind of useful to understand, but also kind of seeing that evolution and growth of your business and understand that'd be kind of helpful for people to understand. So where did it start and how did the kind of product progression roll out?
Yeah, so I had the idea a few years ago, to be honest, but it was kind of trying to taking time to do it and taking the plunge to do it and having someone to say like, okay, go for it. And that, so I think I had that moment when I was pregnant. I thought, okay, well, I'm pregnant and I want to offer JGO the best life that I can with a bit of flexible working. And I just felt like, I don't know, and people may think I'm crazy, but for me, it just felt like the right time. So I was pregnant with JGO. So I decided to, that was the right time. I knew I'd obviously be on maternity leave and things like that. So that's when I started the ideas, and then I kind of got in touch with people to do the to help me with the illustrations and things. So I'd send over what I was thinking in my head, lots of Pinterest boards, and started off like that. Then I kind of got the designers together, the illustrations, and then the technical packs. The hard part was, and still is to be honest, is finding a good manufacturer. So because I was pregnant, I was getting more and more pregnant, I decided that my first collection would be launched at, would be manufactured in the UK, which probably wasn't, wasn't my best business decision. but you live and you learn in business, as you know. And so yeah, that wasn't very cost effective for me, but I think they were based in Acton. It meant that I could drive up, look at fabrics, look at designs, look at styles, and drive back home all in the same day. So that first collection, which launched in January last year, 2018, that was manufactured in the UK, and it sold well, and it was lovely, it was good, it was exciting to get the brand launched. But then I had to very quickly start looking at a new manufacturer because it just wasn't working out cost-wise in the UK. So I was put in touch with another activewear brand, and they gave me the name of their manufacturer, which was nice of them, and they were based in Portugal. And so my second collection was then launched obviously in the UK, but made in Portugal. And now my next collection, that's coming out in the next six to 8 weeks, they are also made in Portugal, but with another manufacturer. So actually, I think one of the hardest things I've had since deciding to start Dr. Tactive is finding a good, reliable manufacturer. Sure. And so I'm now on my third manufacturer, but my second one in Portugal. And I think that's what's been why there's been some longer timelines within timeframes within the collection has been released. It's trying to find manufacturers, and obviously I have got Jago, and so that's been my toughest one is getting out clothes as and when I can, and trying to find new manufacturers. But fingers crossed, I think I found a really good one, and I mean I've got the protos through for my next collection, and they're brilliant, the quality is fantastic, and I'm really, really excited to launch that next collection.
Fantastic, and I definitely want to dig into that, because I know that for many businesses where there's a manufacturer component of that business, it's a big challenge. It's a common question that I get asked, or that appears in the Parentpreneur Accelerator Facebook community. I remember that one of the episodes that I often point people to is the interview that I did with Lucy at Bundlebeds, because I remember that she had a very similar challenge, and actually through luck, she ended up getting her first products produced in Brunei, and then found that the transport costs were too high, and now produces them in China and so on. But it's not been an easy journey there too, and I don't know anyone that would say it is. I mean, but based on the experience that you've had, what would you say, what are the things... Because for an outsider, you could just look at it and go, I don't understand the problem. Is it quality? Is it cost? Surely those are things that you're able to establish up front. You get sent a prototype, that's the quality, and presumably they tell you the cost and you know the price. Where's the issue? So and I know it's not that simple. So talk us through some of the challenges and the pitfalls and the common mistakes that people need to be avoiding if they're in this kind of area.
For me, it was definitely, you'll say, okay, well, I want X amount of leggings. How much would each pair of leggings cost me? And they give you a price, and you're like, okay, well, that's doable. That's fine. But then my UK manufacturer, for example, so I was like, okay, fine, let's go. Let's go with X amount. And I've got this, you get these invoices through, and you're like, well, what's all this? And it would be absolutely things you would never have thought of that they've charged you for. Like stitching. You're like, well, obviously that was supposed to be incorporated in the price. That things that you so some of these are my mistakes that I've now learned from. I now know to ask certain questions before I say go ahead. But when I was pregnant and I was new to the industry, and obviously it's just me, I was getting charged for every single time every time I called them and I asked them if they could maybe try putting the logo here, they would charge me for a whole new amount for this. And if you could maybe try putting the label here, it's just little things that add up that it's never just £25 or whatever it may be to make a pair of leggings. It was always plus this, plus that, plus travel, plus package. It ended up being so much more than what you think you're just paying for. But it's actually like anything, isn't it? It's like when you think you're buying a house, and then they throw in all these other costs that you're just not aware of. That I think if anyone wants to go into this kind of industry, just be, you know, just be, try and get as much information in, and from, before you kind of go ahead and try and from the beginning ask exactly what you're paying for, exactly what is in that cost. And it, you know, and that's what I've done with my current manufacturer, so that there's no surprises at the end.
Sure. Now I think that's great. And what about in terms of like sort of in early commitments and so on, because I know that one of the challenges for those sorts of businesses is obviously the manufacturer will say, well, you know, if you order really big bulk, then we can do these kind of prices. But on the flip side, of course, knowing that it can be such a minefield, the big risk is ordering 10,000 units and finding all these hidden costs and so on times 10,000, or, you know, finding some error in the product times 10,000. So do you have any tips around how to get that balance right?
What balance, sorry?
Being able to do a small enough thing that you can test at low risk, but at the same time not finding like you're just feel like you're spending too much money. I mean, you know, prototyping's one thing, but I guess the prototype gives you a sense of the quality of the product, but probably not
quite the
cost and so on. So how have you kind of made sure that before you, you know, aside from obviously trying to do your homework and getting the detail right, you're still... particularly if it's your first go, you're not going to know everything that you know that should be included in the cost and shouldn't, and so on.
Yeah, it's a hard one, and I think to a certain extent, I think a lot of it's inevitable. I think you kind of, as you get more and more into your business, you learn these things. But I think, you know, in terms of tips, for me, it was definitely word of mouth. I was so incredibly lucky. That a friend of mine that owns a fitness studio, her friend also owns an activewear business, and that she put me in touch with her. And I was quite amazed that she gave me the name of her manufacturer in Portugal. So for me, that was word of mouth. And then, like you mentioned earlier, we had the, when I did contact that manufacturer, we had the issue of minimum quantity of orders. And they wanted me to place a lot bigger than I had. But being a small business, I didn't want to be left with a load of stock that potentially wouldn't sell, like you said, the risk. So you really can, I think you really can try and negotiate with them. But because at first they're going to say, oh, you have to order 500 of each style of each item. And I'm like, well, that's not, I'm going to have thousands of stock. But actually, if you kind of, you know, just... I was lucky enough that they were very understanding of my situation, and they did drop their quantities. And you know, you are paying a little bit more because you're ordering less. You are paying a bit more, but there's definitely room for negotiation. When you contact them and they say 500 straight away, you can. I found that you can go back and forward and try and get to a reasonable amount. And I think as I've got a little bit bigger over the year or so that I've been trading, I now need to up my orders anyway, so it's working out a little bit better. When you first start your first order, you want quite small amounts, but as you get bigger and you get and you grow and you get into more stockists, then you inevitably need to place slightly larger orders anyway. So I'm now with a new manufacturer because I can place slightly bigger orders. Still not huge, of course. I'm not a big company, but I think for people that are making that first order, try and negotiate a better deal and see how it goes, because you most of the time you find you can. That's you've got brilliant. To work at it.
Yeah, fantastic advice. Cool. So moving on, and in fact slightly back to something that was mentioned before, was about the, you know, one of the challenges was taking the plunge. You mentioned that you'd had the idea and the designs on your in your head and Pinterest boards for a while. You know, what is it that drove you to take that plunge at that point, and particularly to set it up during your pregnancy?
I definitely wanted to offer Jago when I say the best life that I can. It's not a, you know, it's not a financial thing. It's more of the flexibility. You know, I can. I spend a lot of my time working, as you can imagine. Anyone that's got a new business, but I can work I can work in evenings once I put him to bed. And he is a child minded now, but obviously for the first kind of year or so, or 10 months of his life, he wasn't. And so I was able to spend a lot of time with him. That's what I really wanted to do. And also work in the evenings or work, you know, around, you know, if my mum come along and helped or my husband was at home, I could pack up parcels then or respond to emails then. But it was about offering a kind of a flexible way of life for myself and for Jago, and obviously my husband. And hopefully, you know, I'm a positive person. The business will succeed, and I feel it will. And then I can hopefully start to offer Jago, you know, the life that I dreamt of offering him. And that's why I did it. I took the plunge. I thought, this is my chance now to really give a good go at this. That's why I did it. And then some people have said, you're crazy, because, you know, the timing. But for me, it definitely didn't feel like I was making a crazy decision.
I've experienced a similar thing with a lot of the parentpreneurs I've worked with and so on, is that it's a weird thing that in theory you're losing a load of time, which is true, but in practice there are also sometimes you can get lots of time. The trick is making sure that you're setting up a business where you can flex it based on the change. I suppose that's the thing. It's like the business that you've set up is one where if you're, you know, if due to horrible sleep cycles, feeding, or, you know, just feeling unwell, if you can't work for 3 days, it needs a business. It needs to be a business where that's fine. Whereas, of course, you know, if you set up a business where actually, yeah, you need to be there 5 days a week or it doesn't work or whatever, then, yeah, it makes it much more difficult, particularly during that time, particularly in the early days. Yeah.
I also feel like with having Jago now, you know, I have to make this work. So there's times when I'm like, I'm tired, or I'm like, oh, I can't respond to that yet, or I can't do that. And then I think, no, I need to, because I have to do this. And so I think when you have something, you know, when you have someone as amazing as a child, I think I'm not making this work for myself. I'm doing it for him. So I think that like having someone that's such a big motivation in your life, that definitely helps as well.
Awesome. Love it. So in those early days, I mean, you mentioned that obviously, you've started small and then you've started to increase your trade and so on. How's that happened? How did you kind of maximize your PR exposure? How did you end up being published in those high profile publications such as Women's Health and Men's World? How's that come about? What's really worked well for you?
You know what, it's just, I have to be honest, it's just a continuous graft, I think, with those. I think I have days where I'm like, I plan my week out, and I have days where I drop Jago off at childcare and I come home and I just contact magazine after magazine after magazine. And 9 times out of 10, I'm going to get ignored. And I contact them again a week or so later. And then I'm on Instagram. So I think nobody works harder for your brand than you do. And so that's why I've not actually got anyone that's doing my PI. It's just me. I'll go to London and I'll try and pop into offices and things. So I think that's how I manage to, is I just keep annoying them, basically. Saying, can you feature my clothes? Can you feature my clothes? And bringing out a new collection. And, you know, like I said, 9 times out of 10, you get ignored. And sometimes you're lucky. Sometimes someone contacts you, I was recently featured in Drapers, which is a huge fashion magazine. It's Drapers Online, and they contacted me because they were doing a feature on being a black female in the fashion industry. So, you know, I think that they contacted me on that one. Sometimes you're lucky enough to get approached for stuff, but other times it's just a graft and you have to keep going. You can't kind of expect to send an email to a magazine and say, hi, I'm Nicole, I'm the founder of Dr. Attractive Work, can you feature me? And they're not going to respond and say, yes, please. You have to give it a good few times and be prepared to send a lot of pre-samples. and that's how I do it. I think it's continuously annoying people, basically. And I'm being quite lucky that I write down the names of certain celebrities or influencers that I would like to see in my activewear. And then I contact their agents. And again, 9 times out of 10, you'll get ignored, but every now and then, and I've been very lucky with mine, their agents have said, send them along. And because I've never paid for Instagram exposure, send them along. And if they like them, then they wear them. If they don't, then they don't. And it's a risk you take. You're sending out a lot of stock. And I've been quite lucky. I've had people like Vogue Williams, Helen Flanagan, the Hemphley sisters, just wear them because they've liked them and I've never had to pay for them. And sometimes I get, you know, that helps because off the back of that, you get a certain magazine may like follow you or contact you. So for me, I'm quite good at my own PR, I think. But it's finding the time to do it, which is why people then, you have to, I'd say you have to put time in your diary to have a PR day because otherwise you won't get it done, which is why people then, they pay PR agents, but they're expensive. And when you're small, I mean, there's definitely room for them. And, you know, I know people that have done very well and had incredible features and things from having a good PR agent. But when you're as small as I am, you know, the money, I don't have money like that really. So I tend to do my own. And I've done all right.
Absolutely, you have. And I think the advice and the experience you've just shared is so valuable there, because I know that this is an area that people really struggle with, and particularly if it's an area that you've got zero experience in, as I did when I entered business, it's such a scary area because it's so black box. It's just, you know, the only experience you have of it is seeing things in the publications, and you've got no idea how they end up there and so on.
Yeah.
And I think also it then becomes really easy to assume that the answer has to be this PR agency kind of route, which, as you say, is both expensive, but also there's no guaranteed results there either. And of course, particularly when you're small, you know, you're small enough that you're not high up on their list. You're not going to get the, you know, kind of premium platinum service that they're going to do. A lot of the work that they're going to have to do is understanding you and your brand and what you're doing and so on. And in a way that you understand implicitly. And so I think your advice there is fantastic. I think particularly for those early businesses, doing it yourself is a really good approach. I think it's useful to learn it that way. PR doesn't have to be a route for all businesses, but works really well for business to consumer, you know, where you need to reach out to lots of people, and that rather than, you know, if you're a business consultancy where you're looking for £50,000 deals, then actually you don't, you know, PR is one way, but actually the alternative is you make those, as you say, like 10 calls and expect most of them to be ignored. You need to be making the equivalent, but directly to the customer. But I think regardless of whether it's PR and whether it's magazines or whether it's Instagram or whether it's celebrities or whether it's businesses that could be potential customers or whether it's distributors and stockists and so on, I love the fact that you highlight you've got to block that time out in the diary, because otherwise doesn't get done.
Yeah. It won't get done. And actually, if you're selling a visual, you know, visuals like I am, and so Instagram's a massive part of my business, then, you know, for me, the biggest part, some of my best sales come from Instagram, doing a good, solid Instagram advert, and then influencers, and not just, you know, any influencer, you know, from, you know, you want someone that is, and that's another piece of advice I give people. If you are doing, and you are sending out whatever it is that you're selling, for me, obviously activewear, don't be fooled into sending them to any and everyone. Make sure that person is relevant to your business. Mm. So when I first started, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll send this to this person, and they could have been in all kinds of reality TV shows, but actually their audience is not going to be wanting to spend £70 on a pair of activewear. But people like the Hemphley sisters who do, you know, go on to lovely yoga retreats, and Steffi White Yoga, who runs yoga retreats and things like that, people like that that have a followers that are interested in activewear, so they are going to be wanting good quality activewear. They're the people you want to be sending your clothes to, not just out there willy-nilly. And I find that if you sign up to like a PR agent, and absolutely that there's room for them, like I said, they'll contact you and they'll say, we've got some people that want your stuff, and there'll be people that are just not relevant to your brand, and you don't want that you won't get anything from it. So don't be, you know, you know who you want wearing them, so approach those people. Write a list of the people that you'd like to see in your clothes. So for me, Davina McCall, people like that, and then approach those people's agents as opposed to just sending them out willy-nilly to any and everyone.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And I also love the fact that you highlight the numbers game aspect of this. I mean, you may not track it, you may not have the numbers to hand, but ballpark, how many items of clothing do you think you've had to send out essentially for free so far in that kind of first year?
I reckon I've, like, different leggings, crops, hoodies and things, I've probably sent out around 50 different items. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, probably about 50 items. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it sounds like, because if anything, I could have expected that number to be higher, but it sounds like it's because you're discerning making sure that you've got the targeting right, making sure that you're asking first before sending, rather than just, otherwise if you were sending out an item for every email that you were sending, then I guess that you could 20x that number.
I'm actually quite fussy with who, you'll often get agents contacting you of people that maybe on like reality shows saying, hi, I'm so-and-so's agent. She likes the look of your brand, or we like the look of your brand. Would you be prepared to send it? For this, and then they say something like, quite often you might look into it more, then they'd be like, and if you pay £2,000, they put it on their Instagram, and you're like, no, I'm okay, thank you. I get that a lot. I'm like, no. So I think actually it's I'm quite fussy. I think most of that 50 or 60, whatever I may have sent out was in the beginning, and now I'm actually quite fussy with who I send them to. And I'm definitely on a mission to get Davina McCall to wear my leggings, by the way.
Nice. Davina, if you're listening, reach out to Nicole. She's got some amazing products that you can have for free.
I'm quite fussy. So that's cool. Probably why the number isn't as high as you may expect.
Cool. No, I love that. Cool. So so far, aside from perhaps some of the manufacturing challenges, we've probably made it sound a little bit like your growth and the setup of the business has been pretty, I won't say easy, but it's like been sort of plain sailing. I know that can't be the truth. So tell us about some of the challenges that you've had when starting the business, particularly as it was during pregnancy, some of the challenges you've experienced along the way and perhaps how you overcame them.
I think one of my challenges definitely were time. I think having the time, and I mentioned it earlier, it's quite nice that you can respond when in the evenings or package parcels in the evenings, but there's certain times when you need to take a call or you need to email, and most of those come with manufacturers actually. They're like, hi Nicole, if you want this sent out here, you need to do this. Hi Nicole, if you want this, you need to do that. And I found that was quite hard with Jago, kind of you've constantly got a little person on your hip. And I found, so I think for me, if I'd have had the time that I do now, it would have been a lot easier. But now that he's one, that childcare, it's quite nice. This year I decided that this is the year for the business to really, really, I'm going to really put my everything into the business. Because last year was, I had a new baby. And so I was very much juggling being a new mum, which is crazy in itself, and running a new business. And now that he's on to go to childcare, it's nice that I treat my job as a 9-to-5, but obviously it's not a 9-to-5, if that makes sense. It's a lot more, if I'm honest. So I drop them off and I come home now and I open my laptop, get a cup of tea and I sit at the desk and I respond to this email and I respond to that email and I do things like I'm doing now. And I wouldn't have been able, and I know that we had to cancel this a few times due to me and due to me having Jago and things like that. So I think it's the hardest thing for me has been juggling a baby with starting the business. I think those things as a separate identity are hard as it is, having a new baby and having a new business, let alone starting them both at the same time. I think that's by far, and you mentioned, it sounds relatively plain sailing, but it's been an incredibly hard year. When you have to make something work, you just get on with it. and that's for me. I can't think of anything. The manufacturing issues have by far been the hardest, thing for me, and some of the mistakes I made financially with manufactured my first collection in the UK they've made things a little bit harder for me this year. But you can't dwell on them, you move forward. But having all those issues and trying to juggle a baby and things like that, it has been hard. But I wouldn't change it, because it's made me even more determined and motivated to make a success of the brand.
Love it. And I think that attitude is so important for making this work. I think knowing that it is going to be tough, but it's worth it anyway, I think is really useful for people. And I think, in previous episodes, we've shared various
tips on things that can work for time management and you know, things like getting support from people around you and all this kind of thing. But ultimately, as you say, it's hard, and I guess part of it is being able to sort of forgive and give you make allowances yourself so that you don't get stressed too much yourself, you know, not giving yourself a hard time because you have to cancel something or move something around, and instead going, well, that's what I have to do, that's what I do. And I think
I think absolutely,
yeah, I think your attitude really demonstrates that.
Yeah, and I recently did a panel talk, and actually some of the advice I gave was actually some days you have to accept defeat, because if you think, okay, I've got to do this Skype call, and then I've got to go to this meeting, and I have to package this, and I have to do this and do that, and also you've got the bit, I think you'll find you'll get into quite a deep place of just that, like, I can't do all this. Whereas if this happened to me a few weeks ago, it's why I cancelled our last Skype. JK was poorly, and I was thinking, could I maybe try and put him to sleep? And hopefully he'll sleep through the Skype. And I think, well, if he doesn't, it's going to be a nightmare, isn't it? And it's going to be terrible. So why not just go, do you know what? It's not going to work today. And I think that you can't always do that in a normal job and things like that. But for me, that is maybe slightly part of the luxury of having my own business, is that sometimes I can say it's not going to happen today. And that's another thing I tell people, if you are going to take the plunge and start a new business, and then if you're also, even if you have kids or you're planning to have kids and things, sometimes you have to accept defeat. Sometimes those kids are going to win, and you just have to accept that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something that we haven't kind of gone into yet, but is also kind of part of that time management picture, is then making sure you're still looking after yourself and for exercise and mental well-being. Obviously, that's something that's really key in your life and something you're passionate about. How do you make sure that you still get time for the exercise? How do you still how do you make sure that you're still at your level for squat training and so on? How's business and family life affected that?
So I'm not going to pretend that I train anywhere near as much as I used to before I had Jago. Because I don't. But again, it's about that saying of accepting defeat, I think. Sometimes I set my alarm for 6 o'clock in the morning, and Jago's been up all night, and the alarm goes off, and I just think, not a chance, and I don't go to the gym. And again, the difference is now, is before, when I was competing, I probably would have had, I obviously didn't have Jago then, but I would have had to go to that gym, I would have had my trainer there, I would have had, you know, a competition coming up, and so the pressure is on you to make sure that you're performing. But now I don't, and it's quite nice, because as I mentioned earlier, I train just for my own, you know, for my own well-being. So if I don't get up in the morning, I think, well, I've got a really cool running buggy, so I can put Jago in the running buggy and we can go out together, which he absolutely loves, or I can try and go to the gym tonight when Callan gets home. So or I can, you know, most of the time, like, if I don't, if it, I'm not too hard on myself. If I sometimes I just don't feel like it, you know, and we're just getting over a phase of Jago not sleeping for over a month properly. And so my training has definitely taken a, and my eating, to be honest, has taken a bit of a back step, because I'm tired. So I'm naturally craving sugar, because I'm just, and coffee, because I'm just knackered. And the business, because we are, you know, in the process of just launching the next collection, things have been really full on with the business. So sometimes I can't justify going to the gym if I'm like, oh, you know, I haven't even had a chance to respond to this or respond to that, so I better just do work tonight. So, you know, I don't have a set routine like I used to, but I still like to try and get into the gym a good few times a week. But I'm just not too hard on myself with it. I'm not too strict on myself with it. And that's in the gym, and that's with my eating as well, because and I've got a couple of, you know, I'm a personal trainer as well. So I've got clients now that have, a lot of people that have had babies contact me because I've had a baby, so they kind of, it's just naturally kind of what you do, isn't it? You train with someone that's maybe quite similar to you and what you're, where
absolutely
you are in life. And I tell them, don't be too hard on yourself. Like, don't think, you know, you're not going to be able to get up in the morning and scramble eggs and then have a chicken breast at lunch and then a handful of tissue. You know, it's just not, that's not realistic to live your life like that when you've had no sleep, you've got a teething baby, and, you know, you want to go to the gym every morning because you used to be able to do that, but you're not. You know, life has changed. So I think I'm just not that hard on myself. And I'm also probably not always so hard on my clients anymore because I understand.
And I'm sure they appreciate it. That's awesome and fantastic advice, because I think it's such a challenge there. I mean, out of interest, for I mentioned in the introduction that in 2014 that you got the broke the squat British record in your weight class. Firstly, before I ask my follow up question, just to help us understand, what does that, for those that don't know what that means, what does it mean?
So when you compete, you do a deadlift, a squat, and a bench press, and you're put into your weight class. So at the time, I was in the 55 kilo weight class. I'm definitely not in around those that weight anymore, And then you compete. So, you know, everyone in that weight class, all the females in that weight class, would do those movements, squat, deadlift, bench. And I broke just the squat record. So I think at the time I was 55 kilos and I squatted, I think, 135 kilos.
Wow.
But I didn't break the record for all three of the movements, just the squat one. But at that time there, I was tiny and I was training every day in massive ways, whereas now, I probably squat about 40 kilos and I can't walk for a week. So it's kind of like, I'm like, oh God, what's happened? And also, it's like you walk into a gym and people, like the gym that I go to, and people expect you to be that same person. So they're looking at you thinking, oh, what's happened to her? I don't put that kind of pressure on myself anymore because I don't need to. So it's quite nice, really.
Yeah, no, that's also, and I think it's so useful for people to understand the difference, because I think, like for me, a few years ago, exercise just wasn't in there at all. You know, the idea of going to the gym wasn't attractive, and I didn't even like, you know, just running or anything. And then I decided, actually, I'm going to make a change in my life. I'm going to get fit. And that the next 9 months was life changing for me, because suddenly I actually developed a love of exercise. I lost 3.5 stone. Yeah. I was, you know, as fit as I've, you know, ever been. But you do then realise, like, oh, wait, actually, it's not just a case of fit or not fit. Like, there are varying degrees of it. And actually, there's undesirable in the other direction. Like, I remember my personal trainer, we're having a conversation of, okay, so what should we set the goal as next? You know, I've achieved the weight loss goal, I'm now fit, you know, what to set it? And so we talked about, you know, should it be doing park runs? Should it be marathons? Should it be other fitness goals? Should it be, how I look kind of things, like six packs and whatever? And he kind of went, to be honest, you could go down the six pack route, but it's not really that healthy. You know, it's like you basically need to get down below kind of, 10% body weight, body fat, and so on. And it's like, and it's really interesting to learn that, like, for someone who's had been nowhere near a six pack ever, like, to learn that actually that could be a decision, not just an obvious life goal, was really interesting. Yeah. And I think as a result, you sharing the fact that, you know, where you were at in terms of your training and what that required and where you're comfortable at now, I think is really useful for people to kind of understand that it's all about kind of setting your goals and calibrating it and acting accordingly. But that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Unfortunately, we're coming up for time, and I could have, according to my notes, we've covered about a third of the questions that I could have covered with you, which is not uncommon for this podcast, but it's been so good talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
It's been lovely. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you for inviting me. It's great. Thank you.
No, my absolute pleasure. And it's just, it's been great to hear about the journey that you've been on and how you've been able to manage it, and the amazing tips that you had around both manufacturing and also around PR and work-life balance and so on. How can people find out more about you, what you do, your thoughts on life, but also about your amazing activewear brand?
You can follow me on my Instagram. My personal one is Nicole Kluwer 16, and then my active one is .activewear. But on my website, I have a little heading called Dash Life. Because my maiden name is Dash, Nicole Dash, but now I'm now married, so I'm now a Kluwer, although Dash is way cooler. So if you go onto Dash Life, it's a lot about my life, really. So you'll find vlogs of, and I interview a lot of kind of people that are that I'm interested in, like Nicola and the founder of Neon and people like that. So I do kind of lots of interviews with people that are similar kind of life to myself, or I talk about my parenting journeys or my fitness journeys, or if I've made some really cool protein balls that week. So really random stuff, but that's where you'll find a little bit about my life, a little bit about me, and then of course you'll see my clothing, which is, so my website is dot-activewear.co.uk. So that's pretty much how you can find me.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, we'll make sure that all of those are linked to in our show notes. But thank you so much again for your time, Nicole. It's been absolutely fantastic. And I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you so much, Alexis. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.